Because I was reading a document that was authored by George Soros over 10 years ago, in which he talked specifically about this kind of all-out war that would ultimately come against Russia, because he said this is the last nationalist state that rests on a foundation, obviously, of Orthodox Christian culture with Russian identity at its core. That has to be removed. So I think the people that are in charge of the West and in charge in Washington think that they have successfully destroyed the national identities of the European and American peoples, that we have no sense of ourselves, our borders are undefended, we present no resistance to incoming migrants from the developing world who essentially roll over us as though we owe them a living, and that our laws do not count. Thus far, I would say that's a pretty good assessment, an accurate evaluation of what we've been doing. And I think that's a great victory for George Soros and the globalists, the anti-nationalists, those who want open borders, and they call it an open society, which means that you end up with nothing, an amorphous mass of people struggling to survive who are reduced to the lowest levels of subsistence. So that's in the background. And in fact, he even goes so far as talking about how useful it would be if East Europeans were the ones that whose lives were expended in this process, and not West Europeans who simply will not take the casualties. This is not a minor matter. This is the sort of thinking that is so destructive and so evil, in my judgment, that's really what we are dealing with in our own countries, and I think Putin recognizes that. So for him, it's existential, and I think the Russian people see it this way. These reports of, oh, the Russians are miserable and want to get rid of Putin. I guess you can find somebody over there. I don't know how many, but certainly in the high 80s, he has approval ratings. And I'd say that if anybody tried to remove the man, he'd probably be killed or cut down long before he got near the Kremlin by Russians who strongly support what's happening. I think they know their survival is at risk. So you're talking about irreconcilable differences, Glenn. And now, could this change? Of course. The United States, I think, in many ways, is on course for a financial or economic Pearl Harbor. The $32 trillion sovereign national debt is not inconsequential. The argument that economics have changed and debt doesn't matter, well, I think people are in for a real rude awakening on that one. That could have a big impact here, because if you look at spending, it is more out of control and outrageous here in this country than at any point in our history. And there are millions of Americans watching the money disappear into the black hole called Ukraine and don't understand why our borders are open, why our police forces are not allowed to enforce the law, why the Biden government won't enforce the law. I think there are Europeans that are worried about some of these things, perhaps not exactly the same way, but in France and Germany, we have evidence from millions of people demonstrating in streets in Prague and elsewhere in the Western world. Those things could change governments. There's no question about it. And we should not underestimate the economic financial impact of future crises. If you had a fundamental change in governments that more accurately reflected the attitudes and opinions of most people in Europe, and I would argue here, which in that public opinion, I think, is we'd like to see a negotiated settlement and we don't want to go to war with Russia. You could see those governments come to power and that would change things. But, I don't know when that would happen, under what circumstances precisely, but I think it's the potential for that grows with each passing day. And that's the only way out, frankly, because the Russians have no one to negotiate with at this point, as you rightly point out.
The United States would not be called upon to act as the policeman of the world. When it acts, it would act in conjunction with others. Incidentally, the combination of manpower from Eastern Europe with the technical capabilities of NATO would greatly enhance the military potential of the partnership, because it would reduce the risk of body bags for NATO countries, which is the main constraint on their willingness to act. This is a viable alternative to the looming world disorder.
Well, the NATO countries continue to insist they are not a party to the conflict, but this document from 1993, published by George Soros's Open Society Institute, gives a different impression. This document from 1993 lays out how the United States and its allies might be interested in using countries across Eastern Europe as proxies to fight Russia, and they could incur the losses that might make the conflict unpopular if NATO countries themselves were directly involved and it was their own soldiers who were doing the dying. Now, the coup in 2014, in which the United States overthrew the Ukrainian government and installed a fanatically anti-Russian group to power in Kiev, seems to match what this document put forward. What we generally hear in Western media is that Ukraine is simply under attack, turning to for help from the democratic West. But Jeffrey Sachs of Columbia University, he recently came forward and said that's not the case.
The United States has overthrown dozens of governments. It definitely contributed to the overthrow of Yanukovych. And I know this from the inside, not just from the outside. So I just want to be clear that I know from top people involved in these issues what I'm discussing right now.
Now, the Soros document not only matches the situation where Kiev is having U.S. weapons piled into it and being supplied with weapons by the United States, it also matches that the government of Poland is very warmongering and hostile to Russia. And furthermore, if you look at the situation, there are some estimates that the Ukrainian casualty rate, we may have seen over 100,000 dead. They are being carried out and people are dying to serve NATO goals. And Kiev has recently admitted this. This is what's been said.
Today we are carrying out NATO's mission without the loss of their blood, but with the loss of ours. That's why they need to supply us with weapons.
And furthermore, we've had U.S. officials admit that this is indeed the purpose of the conflict in Ukraine. It's about serving NATO's goals.
The United States aids Ukraine and her people so that we can fight Russia over there and we don't have to fight Russia here.
Ultimately, I think this is a sound investment for U.S. national security, because not only are we defending a country from authoritarian aggression, not only are we taking one of our biggest geopolitical competitors down several notches in the process, and we're doing it without U.S. boots on the ground in harm's way.
Now, it appears that the Yanukovych government in Ukraine wasn't the only government that the United States had its eyes on for stirring up some kind of regime change and perhaps using it against Russia.
Any place that you're looking at in terms of a potential regime change that could destabilize a region or the world?
Well, obviously, a big one would be Russia, but I don't think they're on the precipice there. I think things have to get worse economically, and there have to be many more body bags and, frankly, military losses before there's a change in the government in Moscow.
We have a very casual statement from Western leaders that they seek to utilize the lives of people across Eastern Europe and let them go out and die to serve their own political agenda. And it shows that this whole narrative where Ukraine is simply being targeted, it's a democratic country just begging for help, it doesn't fit at all. This is part of geopolitical maneuvers.